powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, I don't even know where to start with this one. So I'm going to get to the beginning. I'll get to the middle parts, all the details you need to know. Before I do that, though, I'm going to start at the end. And the end is this, for me, Jake. I'm not quite sure how Kevin Mather can stay in his current role with the Mariners. In fact, I don't think he should. And I don't always feel comfortable, rarely, if ever, feel comfortable in any way calling for anyone's job, which I don't.
Which
is that
a
what
good
I'm doing?
Thing.
No, you know what? I think that is what I'm doing because I don't know how this organization can move forward with Kevin Mather as its current president and CEO. And that became really, really obvious to me when I saw Kevin Mather's statement. By the way, we are expecting a second statement from the Mariners sometime this morning. That was from Mariners insider for 710 ESPN, Shannon Dreher. So we're going to be following her for updates about this morning. But we are expecting another update from the Mariners. Any moment. But Jake, as I was saying, when that initial update came from Mather, he said that his comments, and we'll get into that, his comments didn't reflect leadership within the Mariners organization. And then I realized, like, I can't reconcile that with the idea that you are the Mariners leadership. There is one person, John Stanton, above you. And so this isn't like a personal thing, but I'm having a really hard time making sense of this one. And I think that if this organization is going to move forward, it needs to undo a lot of the damage that was done by a 45-minute long video.
Yes, I as a lifelong Seattle sports fan, Stacy, who dearly loves the Mariners to my core, I grew up in this town, as did all of us, Curtis, Stacy. People know me more for the football side of things and Seahawks inside and all those types of things. But my life, from my family, from my dad, from everybody around me, we grew up loving the Seahawks, the Mariners, and the Sonics. And this is a group, this is a team that to my core, I root for every single year, even when knowing that there are tough times ahead, even when knowing that there's not a whole lot of hope going into a particular year. And over the past 20 years, there hasn't been a whole lot of it. And the Mariners ask us to be on board with the decisions that they make. They ask us to be on board with the rebuilding process. Guess what? I trusted them and saw the foresight on that decision. They asked us to trust that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais are the right guys for the job. Guess what? I put my trust in them, and I've been a major fan of the job that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais have done during this rebuilding process. Now, when I can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel, I can finally start getting excited about the way that this is coming together for the Mariners, Kevin Mather's comments arrive. And today, I'm ticked off and I'm utterly disappointed with Kevin Mather's comments. If Kevin Mather's comments were his own and not in reflection, Stacy, as you said, of the Mariners, which is extremely hard, if not impossible, to separate when he is the literal CEO of the team, then the Mariners have only one choice. If they hope to move on past this, if John Stanton was asking for my advice today, Stacy, then I would tell him the Mariners have to move on and fire Kevin Mather. Mather has embarrassed this franchise, the key players who are supposed to turn this thing around, and the fans who they consistently ask for their support. I do not say this lightly or on a whim or to join a bloodthirsty mob. Mather has severely compromised the future success of the Mariners, simply put. And as we were talking with Kyle Brown, our producer, and we were all in show prep, said one thing that I really liked. Trust is gained in drops, lost in buckets. And this was sure lost in a bucket with Kevin Mathers' comments. And they have a lot of decisions to make up for and a lot of people to mend fences with. And that's why I am so ticked off, because I've been so excited about heading into this year and what's to come and how things are going to move forward. And I finally see the vision. And then here you have your CEO stepping in on a Rotary breakfast call and is just spilling the beans on everything in his own personal view. And now you have greatly compromised the future success of this organization, quite frankly.
Yeah. Let me give a little bit of context. So for anyone who doesn't completely understand or who didn't hear everything, let me just I'm going to take a step back. So we've started at the end, which is really kind of what we've been talking about all morning. And I want to hear from you guys. Visi Hard Seltzer, text line 710-710. But let's start at the beginning, okay? So Kevin Mather, obviously the minority owner in the Mariners, team president, CEO, et cetera, he, on February 5th of this year, had a Zoom press conference call with the Bellevue Rotary Club. And in this call, it lasts about 45 minutes. Kevin Mather gives a series of statements and insight and observations about where the Mariners are, where they were in 2020, where they are right now in 2021, and then where he sees the club moving forward. It's meant to be just this insightful thing, speaking with someone who's on the executive side of baseball operations. Jake,
you're supposed to be. I've done these things before. It's supposed to
humble
be a guest appearance. Hey, here's a member of our club or whatever, and come and talk to the kids, Jake. Come and talk to our club, Kevin Mather, and we'll be happy with anything you share.
Right.
Instead, he's going to drop everything that he has ever held in from the public.
Interesting decisions were made. So Kevin Mather is obviously asked about some of the brightest talent within the organization, or the biggest names within the organization. So let's see. He's going to start by saying volunteering information and cut number two, Curtis. First, this about Jared Kelnick saying that they did offer him a deal and he turned it down.
We offered him a long-term deal, six-year deal for substantial money with options to go farther. And after pondering it for several days and talking to the union, he has turned us down. And in his words, he's going to bet on himself. He thinks after 6 years, he's going to be such a star player that the seventh, eighth, ninth year options will be undervalued. He might be right. He might be right. We offered and he turned us down.
So maybe he means it as a compliment. Obviously, the tone for a lot of these was quite dismissive, and a lot of people felt that. But so let's start here with Kelnick, and we're going to dig into some of the specific kind of moves that we think the Mariners should make moving forward.
Let's then go on to cut number three, because he talks about how he turns down the deal, and then now how this will, because of his non-committal to the organization and that contract, how that's going to affect his then service time.
He won't commit beyond his free agent years. I wouldn't say he's unhappy. He appreciates the offer. He just refused to sign it. He thinks he's going to be that good, and he thinks he will be a very well-paid player after 6 years, and I think he might be right.
So this is where it starts. He says, we weren't going to start the service time clock under any circumstance in 2021, and then says here, hey, and also we're not going to bring Kelnick up until April. Now, obviously, if you know how service time stuff works, to gain that year, you need to be on the roster for 172 days, which is 92% of the year, meaning if you spend fewer than that, so if you were called up in, say, late April, you then don't get that year of service time. So it's incredibly frowned upon, and it's one of those things where everyone has kind of been talking about how the Mariners are probably doing this with Kelnick. He's this amazing prospect, and if he's every bit the star that we all think he's going to be, he's going to be incredibly going to be looking for an incredibly lucrative deal in free agency. So people have been understanding like why the Mariners might be doing this. What you probably shouldn't do as an executive is say outright that you're doing this. I mean, it is something that other people within the organization have tried very hard not to say because it's just very frowned upon. But and you want to keep those relationships healthy with your brightest young stars.
Yeah. So
which Kelnick is one of them.
If that is the case, then go to cut number one. He probably shouldn't be saying that they're not going to promote any of their potential players that could play here in 2021.
We weren't going to put them on the 40-man roster. We weren't going to start the service time clock. There were all kinds of reasons that if we would have had an injury problem or a COVID outbreak, you might have seen my big tummy out there in left field. You would not have seen our young players, our prospects, playing at T-Mobile Park. The risk paid off. We had a great year in development for 15 of our prospects.
So now he's saying that they're not going to at all, no matter what, they're not going to uplift their prospects, guys that they think are going to come up, Cal Raleigh, Jared Kelnick, Logan Gilbert, and you can name a couple others, that no matter how they play in spring training, it doesn't really matter. They've already made their decision, which would only tick off these players with how hard they've worked and how excited they are to get up to the big league club. And then, oh yeah, let's go and dish on Kyle Seager here in cut number four.
Kyle Seager, this is probably his last season as a Mariner. He will, and I've already told him, he will be a Mariner Hall of Famer when he's done playing. And last year, he seemed to find the fountain of youth, had a fantastic year. We expect the same in 2021.
Okay, so now before Kyle Seager even knows that this is for sure going to be his last year, and then you have his wife who's out on Twitter, right, mm-hmm. Stacey, that going out and saying, hey,
maybe we should list our house.
Yeah, should we list our house or what? Like, are you guys not telling us something that we need to know? So he's dishing all this information out to the Seattle Rotary Club before even any of the players are getting notified of any of this. And then this is where it starts
to get really bad.
Yes, this is when it starts getting really bad. Where Mather talks about Iwakuma and how he was tired of paying for his interpreter.
It frustrates me. For instance, we just rehired Iwakuma. Iwakuma was a pitcher for us for a number of years. Wonderful human being. His English is terrible. He wanted to get back into the game. He wanted to, and he came to us, and we quite frankly want him as our Asian scout interpreter. What's going on in the Japanese league? He's coming to spring training, and I made the same. I'm tired of paying his interpreter. Because when he was a player, you know, we'd pay Iwakuma X, but we also had to pay $75,000 a year to have an interpreter with him. His English suddenly got better. His English got better when we told him that.
So now you're having issues with international players, right? And now as a coach, Iwakuma is supposed to come in and he is supposed to mentor your Japanese player, Yusei Kikuchi, and you have a problem paying for an interpreter. You hired this guy to bring him in to fix Yusei Kikuchi, and then yet you have a problem with the fact that you have to pay for an interpreter, even though he can speak English, broken English, and not great English, and isn't necessarily the most comfortable doing it, hence the need for an interpreter. You don't want to do that because of X. I mean, I don't, that one is really, really, really gets me.
Also, I don't love the tones of, like, with the Julio Rodriguez cuts especially, which is just, by the way, wrong. Julio Rodriguez does speak English, and he speaks English well. So well, in fact, that he has a web series on the Mariners YouTube page where he interviews Mariners players. Some interviews are in Spanish. Many interviews are also in English. And Larry Stone of the Seattle Times, who we're going to have on later today, Corey Brock of The Athletic, have both talked about Julio Rodriguez being very particular about making sure that many of his interviews are done in English because he's working to be the face of this franchise and wants to make sure that he can, if needed, conduct these interviews in English and represent the team in a setting where he would be speaking English. And that's a lot for a young person to decide to take on. Not only that, but it's incredibly impressive that he's managed to learn it. And speaks it well. And so here's the thing. If you're someone who has heard all of what Kevin Mather had to say in his press, or not even a press conference, in his breakfast with the Bellevue Rotary Club or whatever, and you aren't offended, say that you're like, hey, as a leader of the team, I have no problem with what he said. I'm not offended. I don't agree with you, but whatever. That's your right to feel that way. How about as an executive? the business implications of a lot of what he said are pretty profound. And as an executive of the team, maybe one of your only jobs, in addition to being the leader of the team, is to also make sure you don't put the team in a bad spot, which unfortunately for Kevin Mather, he did manage to do in terms of the two prospects, this team and its fan base, who are desperate for success, are pinning their hopes on Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelnick.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to one of its most beloved players in Kyle Seager, who's supposed to be a leader with this team. The free agents, you talked about free agents, like trying to penny pinch there. And now, so how's that supposed to affect free agency next year? I mean, there are big implications to what was said in this Q&A session where you didn't have to volunteer this information at all. Wrap all of this up into the idea that the CBA expires in December of this year. There are already souring relationships between owners or team executives and players, especially stemming from negotiations over a COVID-shortened season last summer. That's going to be carried into labor negotiations this year. I mean, this is kind of a nightmare situation.
This is a nightmare situation. You as the Mariners are being talked about in all the wrong ways. And now what you're going to create, if Kevin Mather remains as the CEO for the Mariners, you are going to create a tremendous amount of division between upper management, ownership group upper management, and the team, which in my view really stops at Jerry Dipoto as the GM, and that's something where you have your GM that is part of the team because he's part of this rebuilding process, Scott Servais and the players. And that is not a healthy place to be in. That's not a winning formula. That is not an organization that's going to be conducive to winning and attract free agents, attract international players that you have had success with in the past. Why on earth would they go there or their agents and families and everything else encourage these players to go play for the Mariners when they know that the person right at the top or one of the main people right at the top has these undertones and doesn't like the fact that he has to pay for an interpreter, doesn't like the fact that an international player, a young kid in Julio Rodriguez at 19 years of age, has learned how to speak English, but that there was a learning curve in process. Go figure.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Also, what's wrong with speaking multiple languages?
Nothing. Like, and that's the beauty of baseball, and that comes with the territory.
Right.
So there's all these different things that wrap up that we'll get into later, but overall, like I said before, if John Stanton and this ownership group was asking for our advice as a show, because we firmly believe this, then it would be that they have to move on and fire Kevin Mather, or else you are going to be put in a position where this potential rebuilding process has just been severely, severely damaged, and you might not recover from it.
Again, this team is expecting a level of excellence on the field that it hasn't seen in a long time. It's expecting that. It's bought into it. That excellence needs to carry into the standard for leadership that we have as an organization. All right. It's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one, which person in sports do you want the Bellevue Rotary Club to book for their next Q&A?
O.J. Simpson. Apparently, they're great at getting people to spill the beans.
They can get anything out of anybody.
Man, let's see who else they can get. No, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a great question. It's a great question. Enter any conspiracy theory that you've ever had out there. I mean, hey, maybe Pete Rose. Hey, did you do it? Did you do it?
How about Barry Bonds or Sammy Sosa?
Yeah, I
want to
get
McGuire.
Exactly.
I
mean,
those guys, we know they did it, right?
But the Bellevue Rotary Club will find out for sure.
True. They will get them to open up. That I would agree with that. Maybe anyone who's in charge of the moon landing. Hey, what?
To get to
Buzz
the bottom, of that,
bottom
Jake,
of that,
Jake, are you questioning
there's people
the moon
like
landing
Luke,
right now?
There's people
Jake,
like Luke Wilson who
spent
still
too much time
don't
Luke.
Believe it. I'm just saying.
Jake's
I'm not
like,
saying it,
just,
it for
it,
me
I'm just
personally.
Saying it could have been a studio setting.
But
we should
would,
figure out for
I
other people.
Would just love to have that put to rest.
Jake,
there's
we landed on the moon.
There's a lot of conspiracy theorists out there.
We landed on the moon, Jake.
I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying it would be great to know. You guys are talking about Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa. I think it's as obvious as it gets.
Jake wants to get into other conspiracy theories.
Yes, he's like Area 51.
Look into JFK.
Exactly.
What else do we need
Was
to look
there
at?
A second shooter?
Rotary Club is on it.
Number two.
It's like Mythbusters.
Let's get the Rotary Club on it. Question two. Pass rush was the Seahawks' biggest need in 2020, but where does it fall on their priority list this offseason?
Here's why it hasn't been a big topic of conversation is because you have Carlos Dunlap under contract. But the problem is that you cannot keep Carlos Dunlap under contract at that $14 million cap hit. So what are you going to do? Are you going to cut him? Are you going to extend him? What's the answer there for Carlos Dunlap? If you don't have Carlos Dunlap, then you're in a really, really difficult position. I still believe it is a serious position that has to be addressed. What are they going to do alongside him? You cannot let go Benson Mayoa into free agency and expect that Daryl Taylor is going to be the guy that picks up that production. There's no way. They have to be better than they were very, very good last year. Because they had a really good rotation. Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap, the other guys started stepping up. LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, Jaron Reed really started getting going. But you need to be able to retain some guys like Benson Mayoa and then add with somebody like Daryl Taylor for this group to really take off. So I still think it's a huge position of need, but it's just not, they're not missing right now under contract that one star pass rusher. They have that with Carlos Dunlap. Yeah. But their final answer as to how they're going to get him on that final roster has yet to be told.
I think it falls behind the offensive line, especially given the news this morning. We weren't necessarily expecting Mike Iupati to be back, but the spokesman review saying this morning, Iupati did an interview with them and he's announcing his retirement from football. So now you know for a fact that you're going to need to go out and find a left guard in free agency. If you were holding out any hope that you could just bring Iupati back on a short deal for another year, you can't. So you need to figure him out. You may need to figure center out. So you've got the interior of your offensive line as priority number one. I think we'd all agree. Pass rush, I'd say two or three. I don't know necessarily what I'd put above them outside of some kind of other receiving threat, wide receiver three or tight end. That still might be priority three or four. So pass rush, defensive line, you got to keep that going. I'm going to say priority. Actually, priority three behind re-signing Jamal Adams, or signing Jamal Adams, extending him. I'll make that priority.
Number three.
Okay. No, I kept talking. I'm going to just... Well, Jake's got the whole text line talking about the moon landing, so I'm getting distracted.
Question three. How likely is it that the Seahawks will restructure the contracts of some of their highest cap numbers?
I believe that currently where they're at, I don't see another way for them to get it done. I don't see another way for them to get it done because I know that this team, that John Schneider, Pete Carroll, they want to keep this team intact. They do not want to trade a big asset away just to get draft capital for unknown commodities down the road. They are in win mode now currently. And they see their window in terms of their Super Bowl window over the next 3-4 years, and they say that they want to do everything they can to maximize the roster that they have now. So with that being said, the only way I can see them doing this is restructuring and extending. There are other drastic ways to go about this, you know, trading a couple key players to try and regain all of the capital and cap space, but if you're trying to keep the band together, the only way you could do it is through restructure and extending.
All right, we've got Mike Saul coming on with us next. Unsurprisingly, number one story in Seattle right now we're going to be talking to Mike about is how the Mariners move forward from here. We told you what happened. Next, we're going to be taking a look at how they move forward, what the move should be. Do you part ways with Kevin Mather? How do you reach out to these players? What do you do moving forward? So we're going to be talking to Mike about that. As a reminder, we're going to be keeping an eye on news coming from the Mariners. Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer for 710 ESPN Seattle reporting that the Seattle Mariners will have a second statement about this situation coming out sometime this morning. So we're watching that for you guys. We will let you know as soon as that is released. Mike Salk is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Look, there was maybe a minute or two of our last segment that was dedicated to Jake questioning the moon landing on the behalf of a friend, apparently not him. But the vast majority of it, unsurprisingly, was dedicated to the news of a video going around, Kevin Mather speaking to the Bellevue Rotary Club, spilling all kinds of beans about the Mariners organization and getting it into some hot water with several of its players, including its two most promising prospects. Mike, I mean, I don't really know where to start other than there's so much to unload here. What was just your first reaction when you heard about this video or saw it?
Yeah, you know, I saw it yesterday and immediately thought, wow, it's going to turn into something big. And, yep. And sure enough, it did. I think the word that I have found myself using the most here is trust. And the amount of trust that was violated, and now the difficulty in trying to win that trust back and whether or not it's possible, I certainly have my doubts. And you start thinking about, you know, where trust has been lost. It's been lost from the fans. It's been lost from the players. It's been lost from management. It's been lost from the union. It's been lost from the commissioner's office. And that's five groups right there that have all now suffered a loss of trust with the Mariners president. And we could debate which one's the most important, but you start spinning this forward and trying to determine how this is going to work. It's hard for me to see how this works. You know, if you were the president of the Mariners and you turn to the people in charge of selling tickets and say, how come you haven't sold this many tickets? What are they going to say? They're going to point back and say, well, there's something hanging over my head that was caused by my boss. Yeah. What's a reasonable expectation? How do you hold people accountable if you're not held accountable yourself? How does Scott and Jerry work with players, whether it's Kyle Seager, who, you know, there's already a bit of a tenuous relationship there, little tense, okay, fine, but you're getting through it. How do you continue to have a relationship that's positive with your veteran player during the last year of his deal, where his participation and leadership is incredibly important to you, or at the very least that he not be a disruptive force? If you're Jerry DePoto, how do you go and negotiate with free agents now, either for the rest of this offseason, which is there's still players out there, or moving forward, when it's been out there now that your organization has a specific strategy for trying to get players to come back to you, quote, hat in hand? How does the commissioner's office trust the Mariners with information when they've said their business practices out loud, causing a problem with the union right before a negotiation? Add to that the problems with fans who already believe that this organization has a problem with not spending enough money. Add to that the problems with the racially insensitive comments. Add to that problems with your young players. I mean, Stacy, this list just kind of keeps going. I don't know how you come back from all of that.
That's the part that is really difficult for me, Salk, right now, as a fan of the team. I've been a lifelong fan of this team and have been asked to, hey, stick with the team over the last 20 years, and now you're in this process of rebuilding. Trust us. Trust what we're doing. And I have, and I've been fully excited about what they've done and starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then, boom, you have this. You have these comments that just are going to have a large shadow over what they're doing right now. And last night, Kevin Mather put out a statement saying these comments are my own and not a reflection of the team as the CEO of the Mariners, which is really hard for me to separate. But with all that being said, Salk, this is a difficult thing. Is if that's truly the case, there's only one position that leaves John Stanton and this group in right now to prove to the players and everybody and the fans and everybody that's involved with this organization that those comments don't reflect, and that is to move on from Kevin Mather. Am I reading that wrong?
Well, I think you make a good point, which is, you know, when it's the president of the team who comments, there are no about the team matters. Now, if he was commenting on personal matters or on government or on, you know, anything else not related
Correct.
To the Mariners, you could say, right, those are his views. They don't necessarily reflect the view of the organization. But when he speaks of the organization, I don't know how you separate that. I think you make a very good point. I would tend to agree with all of that, Jake, that the only way to separate the views of the president from the views of the organization is to separate the president from the organization.
We have breaking news. The Major League Baseball Players Association Communications Department just released a statement on behalf of the Players Association. This is specifically in regard to the remarks made by Kevin Mather about, it was initially supposed to be about interpreters in the clubhouse, but this is the statement in full. The club's video presentation is a highly disturbing yet critically important window into how players are genuinely viewed by management, not just because of what was said, but also because it represents an unfiltered look into club thinking. It is offensive, and it is not surprising that fans and others around the game are offended as well. Players remain committed to confronting these issues at the bargaining table and elsewhere. Again, we knew that this would be a huge issue just from an executive, from a business standpoint, with the CBA expiring in December 2021. But let's take a look at the tonal standpoint, because this is really bulletin board material if you're looking at it from a players union point of view, as it should be, quite frankly. I mean, this isn't to say that there's any vindictiveness here. This is exactly what, if you're the players union, you look at and you think, like, this is part of the problem. This is a cultural problem within baseball. And and Kevin Mather just handed them this video example of some pretty horrendous things, and quite honestly, with a tone, and this is how, Mike, I'm trying to find a way to say this articulately, the tone is what has rubbed so many people the wrong way with this.
Yeah, you know, take the tone out of it for a moment, and I think you're right, there's a separate conversation to be had there. Look, the Players Association is going to be upset because they don't have a very good deal in this capacity. I mean, say what you want about the comments made and whether or not this should be said out loud, but manipulating service time is one of the options that is available to all 30 baseball clubs, and most of them take advantage of it. The Mariners are certainly not alone. I mean, you can go back over the last however many years and look at all the prospects that were brought up in late April or May in order to avoid service time issues and to benefit the club. That's not an uncommon practice. And it's not just the so-called cheap clubs that do it. I mean, we see that all over baseball, nearly every single team. The issue is giving the Players Association the ammunition as they get ready for what is already going to be a difficult labor fight. You asked about who's upset today. I don't know that anyone's more upset than the commissioner, Rob Manfred, and all of his negotiators, because this is a major, major black mark and a difficulty for them in their negotiation against the union. So, I don't know what kind of pressure he would be putting on John Stanton, but you want to be on the bad side of the commissioner of baseball when you already have to travel the most miles, when you already feel as if you're an organization that doesn't get all the breaks? I think that's a difficult spot to be in if you're John Stanton and the Mariners. So, you just kind of keep adding all of these things together, and I'll keep going back to the lack of trust. How do the players in this case, the Players Association, trust the owners and the commissioner when they're hearing this kind of strategy said out loud and unfiltered?
Right.
And I think that there's just so many trust issues that are brought up here.
There are a huge amount of trust issues, and that's why I'm embarrassed and frustrated as a Seattle Mariner fan that this is the organization that is sparking this. It came from our organization, right? So that's the part that really hurts as a fan. But the other side of it, though, Salk, that you had mentioned in when you first came on with us, one of the things that I'm definitely fearful of is, okay, you get through this within house, you're able to mend fences, and now you get to 2022 and you're ready to go out into the market and spend big time money, and hey, free agents, the Seattle Mariners, we're back, we're here, and now we just need to acquire a few key players.
Right.
What is that going to be like for them when they step out into that open market and try to compete with others for big time talent?
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be even more difficult than it already was. I mean, it's already challenging to get players to want to come here because it's not like there's a legacy of winning. And I think Scott and Jerry have done a very good job over the last few years of changing a lot of that.
Fully agree.
But this could set you back, absolutely. And if you're James Paxton, of all the people, I wonder how James Paxton feels today. I mean, he's not one to express his emotions. I'd be surprised. He's not going to go to social media like, you know, like some of the other folks have. But if I'm James Paxton, and I now see what that negotiation sounded like from the other side, I'm like, yeah, they wanted me, but only once I came back to them hat in hand. I would think, you know, he'd be another interesting one to talk to, and baseball players all talk. I mean, in this day and age, half the players are more have more allegiance to their personal hitting coach and the group with which they hit or pitch or whatever it is in the off season than they do to whatever team they play for. So they talk. They know each other. This isn't the old days where nobody speaks. And I don't know, man. I think that will be an enormous challenge for them unless a change in management is made here.
All right. He is Mike Salk. Good stuff, as always. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys.
All right. We are still waiting on a statement from the Mariners. We've got the Seattle Times columnist Larry Stone. He has a new article out about this. It's wonderful. We'll have him on to be talking about that at the top of the hour. Before we get to that, though, we're going to take a look at this from a baseball-only perspective. Look, when it comes time for the Mariners to spend big in free agency, they got some big problems now. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, we've been talking about Kevin Mather, unsurprisingly, in that video that was shared to the Bellevue Rotary Club that made its way around the interwebs this weekend. Has since been taken down, by the way, so that should also tell you plenty. Now, there's some of what he said that's going to have a pretty serious impact on the signings you make in free agency in addition to your two biggest stars. So we're going to take a look at some of these. Let's start with his comment on Iwakuma, cut number 5 right here.
It frustrates me. For instance, we just rehired Iwakuma. Iwakuma was a pitcher for us for a number of years. Wonderful human being. His English is terrible. He wanted to get back into the game. He wanted to And he came to us, and we quite frankly want him as our Asian scout interpreter. What's going on in the Japanese league? He's coming to spring training, and I made the same. I'm tired of paying his interpreter because when he was a player, you know, we pay Iwakuma X, but we also had to pay $75,000 a year to have an interpreter with him. His English suddenly got better. His English got better when we told him that.
There's a couple layers of wrong to that.
Oh my gosh. Let's go to cut number 6. I'm not laughing because I think this is hilarious. I'm laughing because this is uncomfortable. I mean, it is.
Because it keeps getting worse.
It just gets worse. Just stop. Cut number 6, he goes on, and guess what? They were asked, because they were curious, Julio Rodriguez, Stacy. What's Julio Rodriguez like? He's one of your top
that
prospects.
That was your question.
He's gonna be
Tell
one
us
of,
about
He's
going to
be one of the best. You know, I mean, Baseball America and everybody has him as a top 5 prospect. This kid's supposed to be special. Hey, we would love to know a little bit about Julio Rodriguez. And this is one of the first things that comes out of your mouth about Julio. Cut number 6.
Julio Rodriguez has got a personality bigger than all of you combined. He is loud. His English is not tremendous, but him and Kelenic are very good friends. He's a year behind Kelenic. He will probably be here in, everybody says 2021. He won't be here till 2022 or 2023.
One of the first things, hey, Julio Rodriguez, he can't speak very good English. He's 19 years old from the Dominican.
And can speak English well.
And, yes, and can speak English well.
Important
he's
to know.
Worked his butt off to speak English and learn English, and actually has a show. If you go watch it, I love it. It's highly entertaining with the Mariners. The little segment that they do with Julio Rodriguez, what does he call it? Vibing with J-Rod, and he interviews players in English.
Yeah,
right. It's obviously accented, but who cares, right? And he's gone so far to learn English that he's actually become an interpreter for some players who don't speak very good English.
And if you are going to be pointing to him being bilingual or language as one of the first things, maybe that's what you should have volunteered. Instead of, his English isn't tremendous, maybe your comment should have been, oh, by the way, he took it upon himself as someone when he was, I think, 17 or 18 is when he started this, to devote a lot of time to learning English. And not only that, but started ensuring that he was doing interviews only in English. and felt like, presumably, according to one article I read in The Athletic, like really happy about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a really cool accomplishment.
It is. It's awesome. And guess what? Then he went on further to say about Julio Rodriguez. People think that he's going to be available for 2021. That's definitely not happening, which we know that, right? We know that. He's still young in this developmental stage. He said 2022. Okay, not a big deal. But then he threw out, and possibly not till 2023? Yeah, that's a really good way to motivate your young,
right,
talented star to keep working hard and to feel valued and to feel like this organization really, truly believes in me and thinks that I'm a future superstar. Because if that's the case, then I'm definitely going to be up with the club in 2022. So there's a lot of this stuff that Kevin Mather said that, Stacey, ultimately has me really fearful about the next step for the Mariners. First, step number one is to have your players within house that you've grown, homegrown within your farm system, and then they start playing well. The acquisitions that you made, Justice Sheffield, Evan White, Kyle Lewis, right? And you can go, the list goes on and on. That those guys start to step up and play well at the big league level. And when that happens, now you have to dip your toe in the water into free agency to round out your club to become a true competitive winner. And how are you going to, if you're Jerry DePoto, I would be so mad if I was Jerry DePoto right now. Because how are you going to expect to go into free agency and go out and try and acquire not only talented baseball players, but what if they're international? What if there's the next Shohei Ohtani who actually comes out and is a star that you want to acquire? In the past, you've had success with competing for international stars, particularly from, you know, Japan or South Korea.
It's been one of your few advantages.
It has.
A friend of mine texted me this morning and said that. He's been a lifelong Mariners fan, long-suffering, and he said the exact same thing, Jake. He was like, one of your few advantages has been the pipeline that you've had.
Absolutely. And also, one of the other things that you've had success with, not necessarily an advantage over other people, but you've had success with the international players. Nelson Cruz, Robinson Cano, Gene Segura. You've been able to acquire some of these players who may or may not have worked out perfectly for you, but they were willing to come to Seattle, right? And now that you have these comments out there, now you have to wonder if you're an international player who's out on the free agent market. Curtis, what are some guys out there right now that could be available in 2022, 2023 that could be major difference makers?
Well, you've got Corey Seager, Kyle's brother. You think he's going to want to come here after hearing this?
You saying his brother is overpaid.
Yeah. They've got Javi Baez, the shortstop for the Cubs. He's going to be a free agent next season.
Gotcha. Is he a domestic player?
He's from Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay. So that might be a problem. Those words, those comments might be a problem. Because if you don't know anything, guess what? If you don't know anything about the organization, like most players don't, then what is your – and when you say, hey, the Mariners called me, they want to offer me a big contract in competition with X organization, your agent is going to do their research. And what is the one of the first things that's going to pop up when you do a Google search when you're an international player?
This.
Kevin Mather's comments about Julio Rodriguez's inability to learn English.
Not true.
Insensitive comments about that. Insensitive comments about Iwakuma having an interpreter. I mean, this is tough sledding right here. And this is tough sledding for this organization, for Jerry DePoto, for Scott Servais, for everybody to build on what they have done, which has been really, really positive. And that's why today on a Monday, you get these comments over the weekend. And seriously, Stacey, I sat there and I typed and retyped and deleted and trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to say about this, and it's been really tough. And it's because of the negative implications that could occur here if you allow Kevin Mather to still be the CEO of the Mariners organization. It could have some really difficult effects on your rebuilding process and exactly where you want to be.
I think not only do you look at specifically the business elements of, like, there are many Mariners fans that hate this team hasn't made, when they have made efforts to spend, it's been awful 100 plus losses with a 100 plus million dollar salary. But then you look at like the idea of not spending, bragging about saving money with a COVID shortened season because you aren't spending for your payroll. Fine when you've got a lot of young guys. But what happens if in the future no Mariners fan wants to hear that you're more concerned with the bottom line than you are with winning? Because a mistake to make for anyone within this organization, and I don't think that some of the people I know within the organization make this mistake. In fact, I know many of them do not. I know many people within this organization that care deeply about the city, care deeply about winning, grew up as Mariners fans and are from here. But I would hope that Kevin Mather, and that John Stanton, for that matter, and the upper tier echelon of management understands that a city and an organization and a fan base that has gone the better part of 20 years without winning, it doesn't mean that you don't have standards for what you expect from your team when it comes to management and leadership and the quality of leadership that you have out there. Are you going to be a World Series team in 2021? No. You're not. But you know what a lot of Mariners fans don't want? They don't want you as a team president to think that means that the bar for the behavior people expect from leadership has been lowered. That's still high. And it would be a mistake to assume that Mariners fans are going to lower their own bar because of that.
Absolutely.
That is a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I fully agree with that.
All right. The Seattle Times, Larry Stone, is going to join us next. He's going to talk about his newest column where he says, hey, guess what? Time is up for Kevin Mather. He'll be joining us. We've got Four Down Territory Timeline. All of it's coming up next.